Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie, and this is The Reason Podcast. Please subscribe to us at iTunes and rate and review us while you're there. Today, we're talking with Brent Reeder, an inventor of medical devices, and Mary Ellen Reeder, his daughter, who is working in the same company. They have developed something called the YARLAP, which is an FDA-cleared device to help women with a particularly kind of sensitive issue. Brent, what is the problem that the YARLAP was designed to address originally?
The YARLAP is designed to treat female urinary incontinence, both stress and urge incontinence, and of course then mixed incontinence.
Now, we are talking, we're all in Oxford, Ohio, where Brent and Mary Ellen, or Brent lives, and they work out of. I live there part-time. Brent is a friend of mine. I want to say that up front, and that's how I learned about his business and industry. The reason we're talking about this is because the YARLAP is a type – it's one of a class of new devices, a type of device that is allowing people to take more power and more control over their individual health and medical well-being. So, Brent – it was how does the YARLAP work? What type of device is it, and you know what does it do that helps women deal with incontinence?
Yes, in fact, to answer your question, it's a transhuman device. I think it improves the life well-being of the individual. The device is intended to do the pelvic floor exercises for a woman, particularly if she is looking for strength in the pelvic floor to control urinary incontinence. There you go.
Okay, and so how big a problem, Mary Ellen? How big a problem is female urinary incontinence, and what are its primary causes?
It's a very large group of women within the United States. Somewhere between 20 and 40 million women in the United States experience some form of bladder control issues and bladder control leaks. The reason that this occurs, your urinary incontinence issues occur, is because your pelvic floor muscles are weakened. And when your pelvic floor muscles weaken, if you think of them kind of like a hammock, all those organs, the visceral organs like your bladder, your uterus, your intestines, all kind of start to shift. And when that shift happens, there is an excess pressure onto your bladder, and that causes stress urinary incontinence, which can also lead to the muscles around your bladder to spasm, and then that causes urge incontinence.
And some of that is, it comes after childbirth. It's aging. What are the contributing factors to a weakened pelvic floor?
There is a huge list of factors that can help with cause urinary incontinence. Childbirth, like you mentioned, is one. And a misconception is that urinary incontinence is a part of aging. That's not true. It can happen with an excess of moving. So if you're jumping a lot, you do an activity such as running or dancing, gymnastics, anything like that where there's a lot of movement on your pelvic floor and a lot of pressure mm-hmm. on your pelvic floor, that can lead to urinary incontinence.
Okay. And then tightening or strengthening, rather, the pelvic floor muscles, that kind of takes the hammock and kind of straightens it out or pushes things back up in a way. Brent, could you explain, and I realize this is – you know, we're on audio here, so we're asking people to kind of imagine in their mind, and this is a first for the Reason podcast, I want everybody listening to think of themselves as inside a vagina and what's the structure there, and then, you know, why is the pelvic floor so important to keep everything kind of in working order?
Well, the pelvic floor runs basically like a basket or a hammock across the bottom of your pelvic floor, your pelvis, and its primary function is to hold your visceral organs in place. So just as Mary Ellen mentioned, when the muscle gets fatigued, it begins to sag, and then the muscles will allow your organs to move out of position, and this creates stress incontinence right. because they put pressure on your bladder. the inactivity of the muscles then can lead them to spasm, and this would create urge incontinence, as Mary Ellen said. So you have this basket at the bottom, and so as it fatigues, it kind of stretches, and you can it puts more weight on your organs, which they all lay on your bladder, and that's where you get stress incontinence.
And then, but what the Yarlap does, and it uses a low voltage, is it low voltage, low wattage? I'm not even sure, but an electrical pulse that helps exercise, stimulate the pelvic floor muscles, so they strengthen, and then that, you know, that flattens things out. It keeps things in order. And then Brent, it also, I know you have a paper in a medical journal talking about this, that it doesn't just help the pelvic floor, it also helps with lower back pain and knee pain and hip pain. Why is that?
Yes, precisely. The Yarlap does put a just acts just like in nature, because when we're exercising our muscles in nature, our brain sends a mild electrical impulse to the muscles to tell it to when to contract and relax. In this case, we put a very mild electrical impulse through the vaginal wall into the pelvic muscles, telling them when to contract and relax. So you can get the perfect, correct exercise protocol every time, mm-hmm. which leads to then very efficient use of your time in doing the exercise, because in 20 minutes a day, you can start to regain your pelvic floor muscle tone. And then this, is, of course, is then important because as a postural muscle, it holds your body in alignment. And the idea that is in the peer-reviewed British Medical Journal that I've written talks about how the pelvic muscle acts as a band that holds your pelvis and lower extremities, your femur, your leg muscles, in position, so that the weight that comes from your spine and your trunk is carried to your heels correctly. If you want to, you can think of it as a Gothic arch, where the weight is at the top. The top of the Gothic arch is where your pelvis joins your backbone, and it goes run down to your heels. And in a church, you'd have like a you'd have a flying buttress, which would hold in the sides. In this case, though, you have the pelvic floor muscles, which hold in the alignment of your legs and your pelvis, so it keeps the weight going to the floor. And indications would suggest from our research, and this is presented in the paper, that good alignment promotes good muscle health and keeps back pain to a minimum, knee pain, and thigh pain.
Yeah, because you were saying, or you've said that in the studies that you did, the kind of clinical trials and the user studies that you did for this, a lot of women said that right around the time that they started experiencing incontinence, they had back trouble, they had knee trouble, they had hip trouble. And your theory is that it, or the idea is that it's all connected. So kind of like if we all, as we get older, if you don't do sit-ups or you do too many back exercises, your posture gets thrown out of whack, and you get all, you know, once one muscle goes, they all start to compensate and you get more and more pain.
That's exactly it. Yeah. It keeps everything in position. That's exactly.
So, and you found over time that the range of women who, I mean, there's 20 to 40 million women who experience some kind of incontinence. Sometimes it's older women, sometimes it's middle-aged women, sometimes it's people, women who have just given birth, sometimes it's performance athletes. So it's a broad cross-section of women. And how is incontinence normally treated of that sort?
Yeah, incontinence can range anywhere from your 20s all the way up into your 80s. And collegiate female athletes will have hypertonus, which is tense muscles. But usually it's treated by doing Kegel exercises, which everybody's heard about. The issue with Kegel exercises, though, is over half of the women that are shown how to do them leave the office and can't remember how to do it. And, of course, everyone who's an athlete knows that the efficiency and the effectiveness of an athletic workout is how you follow the protocol. So,
and on top of Kegels, which are difficult to do, then you might also be prescribed pills, or you get surgery, right? That is
So when it comes to incontinence, most women are incredibly shy about this, and that's because there's a stigma associated with when you start to leak, you're basically turning into your mother or your grandmother, and it's all downhill from here.
You know, I got to tell you right now, then I've really got problems because I don't want to turn into my mother. I don't want to turn into your mother either, Mary Ellen. Nothing against her.
That's the idea.
So the problem is, you start wetting your pants, and it means either you've just given birth, maybe, and like, you know, if you had an episiotomy or a C-section or something, God, like your life is over, or you're cruising into your 40s or 50s and you're hitting menopause and you're becoming your mom or your grandmother. That tends to keep people, they want to keep that on the down low. They keep that to themselves, is what you're saying.
Yeah, but then there are women who go to their doctor and they are told to do pelvic floor muscle exercises. And so they do the Kegel and they're taught how to do it. And when they go home, they tend to forget it. And then they aren't doing it correctly and they aren't getting the benefits. And then they say, well, these Kegel exercises are doing nothing for me and I still have urinary incontinence. What's the next step? Well, the next step then in the United States is to usually go to prescription medication, which has an array of side effects, such as dizziness, constipation, that kind of stuff, the normal ones you see on those ads on TV, or surgery. And some women opt for the vaginal mesh slings that you've seen on the television. And it's different in the United States than it is in Europe. Because in Europe, the front line of treatment is actually using a device like the Yarlap, which trains the pelvic floor muscle for you in an easy, effective manner so that you have these incredible pelvic floor muscles of steel instead of opting automatically into prescription or surgery.
Right. And it's Brent, this is an FDA-cleared device. Explain what that means. I think most people understand that the Food and Drug Administration tests or certifies and validates drugs, pharmaceuticals, to be safe and effective. What is an FDA-cleared device, and what did you have to do to get through that?
Well, an FDA-cleared device really can encompass a lot of things, which also includes absorbent pads, adhesives, bladder support devices that are approved by the FDA, even the pelvic sling, which is has to be cleared by the FDA. Our device is cleared by the FDA and has to submit clinical efficacy studies to prove that the device is reliable and effective.
Right, and safe for when used.
It's quite a long process.
So you discovered, and I guess, Brent, why don't you pick up on this? You discovered as you were doing your focus groups, as you were doing your research, your clinical trials and stuff. So, you know, you found that you were trying to treat urinary incontinence in women, and you did that by using a low-level stimulator to basically do super Kegels or Kegels. And then you discovered a side benefit that had to do with sexual performance. What was that, and how did that come about?
Well, historically, societies have pretty much understood the importance of sexual fulfillment. And that sexual response is sometimes an important part of even your cultural identity, like Aphrodite and all. And these skills are usually passed down from mothers to mothers and things like this. But, of course, as Dr. Kegel points out, who the exercises are named after, that the sexual feeling within the vagina is closely related to muscle tone and can be improved through muscle education and resistive exercises, which is exactly what the Kegel exercises are and exactly what the Yarlap does, except Yarlap does the exercise for you.
So, but what's it? Does it make sex better for women? I guess that's my question.
Yes. The most women we find are really pleased with the results that they get in a number of ways, not only structurally in reduction of back pain and the lessening of knee pain. In fact, we've had people call in and ask us about that. But they're really pleased with how quickly it works, particularly with urge incontinence. And they are very pleased that they have regained some of that youthful feeling that they had when they engaged in sexual activity. But the indications for use for the device are for treating urinary incontinence. Mm-hmm.
Although once it's out there, are medical devices similar to pharmaceuticals or drugs where once they've been approved, then there are multiple uses to which they can be put?
That's a difficult question for me to answer.
Okay, you can't do that, but a doctor or somebody else could say, hey, why don't you try this for that? And so, for instance, there's something like mirtazapine approved as a pre-SSRI antidepressant is now mostly prescribed as a sleep aid. Viagra was originally came out of attempts to create something for heart attacks, I think, and is now used as a sexual aid. So, Mary Ellen, what were women saying about this? Because this is, I mean, you guys are selling this as a, it's a pelvic floor exerciser, a muscle exerciser, and it does that well, and it builds up muscle tone, and it helps in all of the things you're talking about. But then, what did you find when, at the FDA, do you go into is there a way that people tend not to think about sexuality and medicine or health in the same way? You know, you go to a doctor for one thing and then you watch porn or you read sexology books for the other. Is there a problem or did you find through the FDA process that it was difficult to talk about these two things at once?
I think that the FDA is a very good organization in protecting and fulfilling their role for the American population. And I have a collegial relationship with them. One of the things is when it is a medical device, it does have, the clearance by the FDA for efficacy and safety. A lot of people don't understand, and this is one of the things that maybe you're alluding to, is that in the usability studies for our device, we were surprised that many women didn't understand that adult toys were not regulated in any way, and that there were some assumptions that they had all made about that. And certainly I think that if I, as a parent and certainly as a lover, I would prefer my wife or paramour or daughter to have her information from someone that is responsible and understands the risks that are involved with medical device design, educating me and my family about pelvic health, as opposed to someone who might make less educational
things. And now, Brent, I know that you have distinct libertarian leanings, but you're really talking about putting the FDA, the government, in the vagina. That's I didn't expect to hear that from you, to be quite honest. But but we live and we learn. But, I mean, you could
well,
have
they,
gone.
They, well, there are,
no. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say there are some very serious considerations that need to be made, especially in the delivery of power and things like this. I think that,
you should probably be thinking very carefully and reading all of the small letters on the box, right? When you buy a vibrator or a dildo or any kind of sex toy is what you're saying, or any kind of medical device for that, matter. You also talked about, or we have talked about in various conversations about how you could have taken this through a urological track at the FDA or a gynecological. Would that be the separating? Or like you could have had this cleared as a sexual device or an incontinence device, but it would have been virtually impossible to say it's going to do both because the government doesn't think that way. Is that correct?
I would say that the government has number of constraints. They are really, the FDA does encourage innovation, and the FDA does encourage development of responsible products. Certainly, though, there are guidelines that you need to follow based on case experience that make for prudent decisions. So when it came down to how we would introduce a device that would make effective muscle tone, considering how the energy was delivered and how the safety considerations, it was best to go as a device to treat urinary incontinence. And I think their decision was very good.
I'm not asking you to badmouth the large government organization that regulates you and holds your future in the palm of its six-fingered, sweaty hand. But it is true that, like, you know, the government, and I guess it's not just the government, Mary Ellen, you guys, I mean, your primary outlet for this at this point is online sales, and you have a Facebook page, constantly trying to get on Amazon, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But there seems to be a reticence for Americans, and maybe it's all people, I don't know, to talk about medicine and sex and health all in the kind of same conversation. These are talked about in very separate ways. And talk a little bit about how at Facebook, for instance, you're under their advertising terms, you're not allowed to kind of make any kind of sexually explicit claims in advertising. Is that right? I mean, is there kind of a wall of separation between you can talk about incontinence but not orgasms, essentially?
Yeah. So there's we ran into a few of the guidelines with Facebook when we tried to run some ads, because they thought that we were trying to promote sex and trying to promote sex toys and all that other kind of stuff. And we had to open multiple cases with them saying that we are an FDA-cleared medical device that treats urinary incontinence, that we are not a sex toy, we are not a sex device. And it took a few back and forth exchanges before they realized that there is a separation between our medical device and an array of sex toys, which makes sense, because I think that if they didn't have that regulation, we would probably be seeing dildos and all that other kind of stuff displayed on our ads constantly. But it took a while for them to kind of see that there was a differentiation between us and who they thought that we were.
Right. But, well, here's a slightly different question, and then I want to talk about how the Yarlap, for what it does and the multiple functions that it performs, I think it's at the leading edge of a whole kind of way of thinking about self-directed wellness. But do women, Mary Ellen, do you find that – do women themselves have trouble thinking about kind of the body – you know, about their body and learning, you know, understanding and knowing their bodies better, but medical health and sexual functioning as related, as opposed to these are three very separate categories and you talk to different people about them and you know, you're not really sure what's what, which seems to reflect to a certain degree the hesitancy of whether it's the FDA or Amazon.com or Facebook to allow the consumer to kind of decide what's what.
Yes. Only recently has the United States, and I think a lot of the world, started to look at pelvic floor health as a collective issue instead of separating it by the orgasm and the pelvic floor health and your postpartum depression. Those are all separate entities, I think. And in reality, they're all one being. It's all about your well-being. It's all about your pelvic floor health, well-being as a collective issue. And I think that there is, personally, I think that there is, when it comes to women, a huge divide between sex, your health, and all things embodying that, because we've kind of been told to hush hush for a while. And, if you look at different outlets, only very, very recently have people started connecting, the orgasm with your health And especially that was outlined in the British peer review medical article. And that was very big. That was very groundbreaking. So I think that there is a definite divide.
And Brent, why don't you talk a little bit about this? Because this is actually, kind of in a way, one of the big reveals of everything that you've been working towards in that medical journal article. You posit a function of the female orgasm, which is very different than, you know, what we've seen over the years. I mean, essentially, there's a long history of science saying, you know, obviously, if you believe in evolution, you believe that all behaviors that are, you know, pop or widespread and reproduce constantly, that they have some benefit on spreading genes, on propagating genes. A lot of theories about the female orgasm was that it made it more likely that a woman would be impregnated by a particular act of sex, or that it would help emotionally, it would help her pair bond with the man or something like that. What in your article, what's the function of the female orgasm?
Well, you're exactly right. I think that it's a little bit androcentric to think that the female orgasm is exclusively related to reproduction. And Elizabeth Lloyd, a professor at Indiana University, wrote a book that was published by Harvard about the data that is, when you examine clinical data, the orgasm is not necessarily reproductive. And I read the book, thanks to you, and it was very clear from my years of medical device design and human anatomy that the female orgasm and the clitoris, which runs along the pelvic floor along with the muscle, is a maintenance mechanism to keep the pelvic floor muscle tone and the body in line, as we
so it's basically
earlier.
And you know, this is, you know, Freud famously asked, what do women want? And we don't know. You know, I don't know, Brent. Mariella, maybe, you know, if you want to write it down and slide it over on a sheet of paper, it would be appreciated. But what you found was, I mean, essentially that the female orgasm, rather than being directly linked to the motility of sperm or anything like that, that it helps women maintain the pelvic floor muscle tone. And hence, you know, they enjoy sex more. But as important, it keeps their posture good. It keeps them from being incontinent and things like that. It's like a workout, essentially.
That precisely correct. And it has so many ramifications because, as you know, not only as Dr. Lisa Lloyd pointed out, but as Beverly Whipple has pointed out when she's writing for the World Health Organization, the female orgasm is part of well-being. It's not only its physical ramifications, but there are emotional ramifications to it. Psychological well-being comes into play, particularly after postpartum, when the urinary incontinence can be associated with depression and things like this. So yes, it's all about well-being. It's not just structural. It's or physiological. It's also
so
psychological.
So where do you go from there? And I want to ask let's talk a little bit about this. You know, one of the things, how much does the Yarlap cost? And you sell it online at Yarlap. If people look up Yarlap, Yarlap, and they go to, is it yarlap.com?
Yes. They'll see a beautifully designed website, thanks to a great graphic designer, and it is $2.99, and it includes free shipping and a ton of lube, a lot of lube.
Because it's essentially, it's like a couple of inches long, and women will insert it into their vagina, and then there's a it's like if anybody has used a TENS device for muscle pain cessation and things like that, there's a pad that you use to punch in the right numbers that you want for the program you want, et cetera. Mary Ellen, talk about you know, how is this different? Or I don't want to say it's different from everything else, and there are other pelvic floor muscle exercisers out there, but you know, we seem to be entering a new age where people know that they are going to be, male or female, that they're going to be more and more in charge of their own health, and especially that broader term of well-being. Yeah, we have insurance companies that are always trying to, like, cut, you know, cut our payments. We have doctors who are too busy to see us. How does the YourLap fit into that idea of becoming a more educated person? You know, all of us take our diets more seriously. All of us take our exercise programs more seriously, et cetera. How does the YourLap fit into that urge to really become, to own our bodies kind of literally and figuratively more than we have in the past?
Yeah, no, you're 100% correct on that. And the YourLap, just real quick about the size, when it says like a few inches, that sounds a little daunting. It's about the size of like a lipstick tube. So it's actually incredibly tiny, which is what I think separates us a lot from our competition, is because we actually listened to women when they wanted to know how they would like to take urinary incontinence treatment into the privacy of their own home. And the number one thing that we heard was small and discreet and comfortable. So we created that for them. So it's not something huge or daunting. This is the YourLap. It's cute and it's tiny. And it will get, you will have that bladder-free leak life. I have it in a like tiny little makeup
okay,
kit.
Okay, so thank you for, and you've just made all of our male listeners, who are probably a majority, you know, feel good that, you know, size matters, but not in the way that you think. Sometimes small is good.
Yes, it's like the rhythm of the boat, not the size of the ship. So I literally just wrote it on a post-it note and slid it across to you of what women want. You're very welcome, all of you. All of the men out there, you're welcome. But to go back to what you were talking about, when it takes to women about improving your lives and taking your health into your own hands, the YourLap is – you could actually regard the YourLap as a transhuman medical device, which isn't to say that we're going to make your life longer, but will make your life better. Because when you do have incontinence, and you know that you do, you don't want to have it. You don't want to always be leaking. I mean, if you look at the commercials or you look at the testimonials, you have these women who are embarrassed, who are kind of in fear that they will be socially exiled or isolated because they're leaking themselves, when in reality you can easily treat that and you can kind of flip it and go back to where you were and take that control back into your own hands in your own home, and kind of give yourself your own treatment, because, you know, who knows your body better than you do? No one. So that's the great thing about the YourLap, is that it is specifically designed for each woman. So you are able to find a level that feels comfortable for you. It's not a one level program, or it has like 10 different channels and then that's it. You can make it comfortable for yourself, and you can control it in your own betterment. And it kind of, I think you can regard the YourLap as a transhuman medical device because it does make your life better. You do have a more fulfilling life because you're able to do the things that you weren't able to do with incontinence. Like, you can go dancing or jump on the trampoline again, whatever you want to, ride a horse.
Finally, that's, you know, the trampoline jumping is really taking a hit, especially under the failed, you know, Obamacare and then the failed repeal and replace. I mean, nobody's jumping on trampolines anymore. Now we can.
Yeah, I know. It's a travesty.
Well, I would like to encourage you, if the large majority of our listeners are men, you guys think about it. Just think about the muscle control in the pelvic floor. You might want to try as a nice well-being gesture.
And dreams begin responsibility, Brent, of course, and thoughts. Do you, Brent, is there a male analog, both in terms of the pelvic floor muscles and problems that are associated with male incontinence or sexual functioning or posture? And then are you designing something for that?
Men, of course, we certainly have pelvic floor muscles, and they are also involved in our sexual response. the answer is yes, we're always looking to develop devices, but the key for the YARLAP is that female urinary incontinence by way of especially birthing is a very big issue in the United States. And, you know, as Mary Ellen mentioned in the beginning of the conversation, that 20 to 40 million American women will have some kind of urinary incontinence, and about 6 million of that will be severe. And addressing that problem is simple and effective and actually has some wonderful results, as we've been talking about.
Well, we will leave it there. This has been an offbeat conversation for a reason, but I think an essential one. What I find fascinating about the YARLAP and about what you guys are doing is that Mary Ellen, as you were saying, it puts, you know, more control and more power into the individual patient precisely at a time when technology is creating all sorts of interesting innovations and whatnot, but also where we see everywhere around us, the medical or the health insurance industry, they don't really care about individuals. They care about bottom lines, and that's fine and well. But this gives you knowledge and power and another way of thinking about stuff that doesn't just affect medical problems, but also sexual, psychological, broader cultural things. I think it's at the leading edge of a whole new world that we're rapidly moving into, where, we take more control of our retirement and of our education than ever before. Why not our bodies?
Exactly. We are in the same boat.
I just hope the motion isn't going to – I'm not going to get seasick then. We've been talking a little bit too much about motion and boats and seasickness.
Well, I think the motion analogy was pretty darn good. Ask all your male listeners
we have a lot to think about. So I want to thank Brent Reeder and Mary Ellen Reeder. They are the people behind the YARLAP, a pelvic floor muscle exerciser that you can find online at YARLAP.com and check it out. And it's not just what it is, but what it symbolizes about the near future, the immediate future, the present of kind of an individualist take on health and well-being. Brent, Mary Ellen, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
This has been the Reason Podcast. I'm Nick Gillespie. I want to thank you for listening, and I want to ask you to subscribe to us at the Reason Podcast at iTunes. And while you're there, rate and review us. Thanks again.